Jay Radliff, our buddy at daytradefund.com, joining us now to talk a little bit about what's happening with our money in the market and the investors' reactions and the Fed. Oh, Jay, lots to talk about. Another week last week, record highs, earnings driven somewhat.
I think we need a Buzz Lightyear sound effect, you know, to infinity and beyond, because we've talked about it. JT, when the Dow crested 39,000 and was headed north, and this morning the Dow futures are down about 111 points, you could just see kind of a collective wow that was taking place across Wall Street. Because you and I remember when the stock market was approaching 20,000 on the Dow, and the thought was, well, that's great, it can't go higher. Sure. We had the same sort of expert call at 25, 30, 35,000, and so on. And here we are with all the issues that we have going on right now, and we have plenty, and yet the market is still going up and up and up. And again, the disconnect between Wall Street and Main Street is certainly reflected here. But this is going to be a fascinating week because we have some inflationary data that's going to be coming out that's going to be fighting, if you will, the earnings. Some of the earnings reports have been good. As you and I have talked about, though, it's a handful of stocks that continue to lift the markets right now, which is a little bit of a scary scenario for me. But the inflationary data that we're going to be getting tomorrow is going to be data that the Fed is going to use, Jerome Powell and his friends, to determine what the next step is going to be as far as an interest rate pause, cut, or increase if it is so needed. So investors right now kind of holding their breath, seeing what this week holds, and then, of course, trying to determine how the Fed's going to react when that data is released.
Yeah, and I like Jerome Powell in that he kind of ignores the noise and the hype on the sidelines in all directions, and he really zeroes in every time and stays right where he needs to stay as the chair in looking at, okay, where are we and what is my goal and are we close or not? So how close to that 2% are we getting? Is it moving in that direction or is it kind of not so fast?
Well, we've been trending in that direction, but we've been trending back a little bit of late. And of course, a lot of the people are saying, well, Jay, come on, you know, this little blip on the radar is not representative of a trend. Totally agree. And it's going to take time to determine how things are going to go. And that's why finally we're starting to hear from people that are saying, okay, I guess we're not going to have seven massive rate cuts in 2024. And I'm like, we were never going to have that many. The idea is the Fed's going to do what they're going to do slowly. As they raise interest rates, they will decrease interest rates, but it could be the summer before we start to see even the first interest rate cut. But a lot of that's going to depend on, again, as you mentioned, Jerome Powell. And I know President Trump has indicated that sometimes Mr. Powell is guilty of political influences on his decisions on the interest rate cuts or increases. And I don't agree at all. I think that Jerome Powell has been pretty much his own person. He's ignored the noise from both sides of the aisle and said, what can we do to make sure that we don't repeat the mistakes of the 70s where we had inflation? I mean, you know, we just celebrated the U.S. hockey teams, you know, I think 44-year anniversary of whatever, the Miracle on Ice. I looked and the interest rates back then were 13.6% when that was going on. If you wanted to buy a house.
Yes.
I mean, that's crazy.
Right.
And that's what Jerome Powell's trying to make sure that we don't go back to. By the way, it was the next October, those interest rates went up to 18% before they mercifully peaked and started falling back.
Yeah. All right. Quickly, I know you spent a lot of years in the aviation business as an administrator there. United Airlines, following the lead of American Airlines, increasing those checked bag fees. Oh, my gosh. I mean, aren't consumers tired of the fees when they rather just have it tacked onto the price of everything included?
It's like a mafia. You want to fly? More money. I mean, it's, you know, it's $35 for a check bag fee. First on American Airlines, they raised it to $40 because of rising fuel costs. And of course, JetBlue quickly followed. And United says, hey, you know, we could use that extra money. So they're doing it. The airline industry is follow the leader. That's what they do. They raised $33 billion last year in bag fees alone, more than $100 billion in all the ancillary fees. And many times, those of us who fly pay more in fees than we do the fare that we're paying to fly, and especially on the low-cost carrier side of things. So right now, airlines are going to continue to do it. They are going to try to create as much revenue as they can. Sadly, they're going to continue to do so, meaning 10 years from now, you and I might look back at this thinking those were the good old days of travel, and isn't that a scary thought?
Well, that's a lot of profit, no doubt. I got to think in the free market system, some CEOs going, fine, if they're all going to do that, watch this. I'm going to charge no fees for that, and I'm going to step up my game as far as serving our customers, and you know, watch the flow come to our direction. Is that a potential?
It could be. And of course, there's a lot of people that said, gee, I would always pay more to fly on an airline that gave me better service. But guess what? Every single time one of these little airlines start up that charges a little bit more to fly to the same destinations, what do people do? They go with the lowest fare possible.
Right.
They ignore where the better service is at. And then they scream and complain because that carrier went away. Well, yeah, we know why they went away. Right. We didn't support them.
Very good. Jay Ratliff, thank you, buddy. I appreciate you. Jay Ratliff, daytradefund.com.